Magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is a Tuesday. It is 9 o'clock and I have the legend, Nate Kranzo, right here on the channel. Nate, how you doing, man?
Great. I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, man. I'm really excited to finally do this.
Thank you so much. I know it's Thanksgiving over there. Or it's coming up on Thanksgiving. I know you're probably really busy. You just told me.
I've been fasting just so I can pig out.
you have to kind of work yourself up for this. it's a big thing, isn't it, in America with the... lots to eat on Thanksgiving, right?
It really is. It's just a tradition of gluttony, a full day. The thing is, it doesn't usually stop after the day because then you've got days of leftovers. So it's just like days of gluttony.
Well, you know what? I'll ask you this, because just before we start talking about magic, I've been following your career from day one. You know that. And you are a very different person than you were when you first started releasing.
Yes. I still do. The funny thing is I still eat as much as I used to. The difference is I just move around now.
Secret, because I was watching Outside the Box the other day.
Yeah.
I was showing Ryland and I was like, oh, and he's like, because he's a fan of yours. And he's like, that's not Nate Kranz. I was like, yeah, it is. It's the same guy. You look amazing, man. You really do.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was just it was definitely a conscious thing about trying to do the math here. It was like maybe around 2004, 2005, maybe when I lost all the weight, and it was just like I just kind of like had not really my whole life been heavy, but for most of my life had been a heavy person. And I just was kind of like over it. I was like, you know, there's a lot of things I can't really do. I can't really like go for a run. You know, I can't do certain things. I hit on girls and they don't want to talk to me. Maybe they'd like me more if I, you know, looked cooler, you know, which isn't necessarily a real thing, but I thought that was true. So I guess maybe I'm trying to say, I just wanted to get laid. No, I shouldn't say that. but the reality is I just was kind of sick of being a heavy guy, and I thought, you know, I'd actually tried to lose weight a lot over the years, but I wasn't really because I think what would happen is I would try to diet, and I would go on a diet for maybe like 2 or 3 months, and I would lose like 2 or 3 pounds, and I was like, oh man, that was like a lot of sacrifice. I didn't eat certain things and I didn't really get much out of that, so heck with that. Screw that. I'm just going to go back to my normal ways. But I finally one day just got a gym membership, and that's what did it. I kind of like forced myself to start going to the gym, and I couldn't really do much at first because I was like 300 and some pounds. You know, I was 340 pounds at my heaviest, and I would just walk. I would just walk on the treadmill and watch TV, you know, put on headphones and walk. And then I slowly got confidence as I watched people do other things. I would do these little machines and that machine. And then eventually I was just doing everything and lifting weights. And I got to a point where I was in the best shape of my life. And I've gained a little bit of weight since then. I'm a little bit more relaxed now. I'm not so hardcore about my working out and my food intake, but I'm a much more like normal average looking guy and average weight. And I'm super happy, and I can go on a 5K and I can do anything I want to do. There's things I've actually like not won, but I've like placed in like running races. And it's like something that I never thought I would do ever in my life. I hated running. The idea of running a block, it would make me cry. You know,
that's really inspirational. Really inspirational.
So yeah. I didn't do anything special. I literally just started doing simple things like, you know, not eating McDonald's and started eating breakfast, because I would like kind of have a bad eating cycle. I would just like, you know, wait till like dinner and just eat a ton of food and then like pass out and basically just eat one big meal a day. So like, you know, my metabolism was really slowed down. And yeah, I basically just learned about nutrition and figured out how to eat like a human.
Well, you know what? You look great. You really do.
Thanks, man. I'm trying.
Yeah, totally. But let's talk about magic, because I want to I want to find out how you got into magic. The first time I think you came on my radar was the moving tan line, but which I want to talk about. But let's start from the beginning. When, was it the typical I got into magic as a kid thing, or how did you find magic?
Yeah, I got like a little magic set as a kid, but it didn't really take. I didn't really get into it because I think it was a little bit like, what do I do with all this stuff? I wasn't ready for all these organizational things, and I had a lot of parts to it. I remember putting firecrackers in one of the drawer boxes and just lighting it on fire and blowing it up and just thinking, oh, that's cool. I can show there's nothing in there. And then there's firecrackers. And then I just lit it on fire. And it was about maybe when I was 13, I saw a live magician that had came to like the local fair. Cause every summer we would have like a little fair that would come to town and everybody goes and rides the rides and eats the candy and stuff. And there was like a separate tent set up with like local organizations that were like just doing their thing. And so there was like the local IBM club had like little magicians set up at a table, and they had like flyers. I think they were trying to recruit people to come to meetings. And I was just blown away. I'd never seen a magician before, aside for like David Copperfield on TV. And then I saw this guy, Christopher, do really good billiard ball routine, like right in front of my face, just like bam, 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 awesome sleight of hand. And I was just like, what is going on? And he did the whole like fake explanation with the tube going up this arm, going across. And I was like, wow, he's got a tube. That's cool. Like, where do you get the tube? So I was like totally suckered in. And long story short, I had a boring English class, and the kid next to me, one of my best friends, would one day showed me a card trick. And I was like, wow, I didn't know you knew a card trick. And so I showed him a card trick. And then we were kind of like doing this war of card tricks. Every day we would try to like show each other new card tricks. So I quickly ran out because I knew like two or three. So then I found out that there was a card trick book in the library at school. And so that kind of like, now I had 100 card tricks to like come back at him with. And then I was talking with him. I was like, you know, I met these guys. I saw these magicians, and they gave me a flyer that they meet like once a month. And I'm like, maybe we should like check that out. So I went home, and it was kind of like this serendipitous thing because I dug up the flyer, and it was, they were meeting that day because it was like, we meet once the first Wednesday of the month. And it was like the first Wednesday of the month. So I was like, hey, let's go. It's tonight. So we went, and then like the rest is history. We went to IBM meeting, and eventually he stopped going and I just kept going, you know? And that was when I was like a freshman in high school.
And did you go straight into, because obviously you're a full-time professional, that's what you do for a living. Did you go straight into being a magician full-time, or?
I went to school in Pittsburgh. I grew up in Michigan and went to school in Pittsburgh, which isn't very far. It's about 6 hours away if you're driving more towards New York, basically smack dab in between Michigan and New York. So I went to college there, and I went to there because I was interested in doing special effects, like special effects makeup and stuff for movies. And they had like the best program in the States for that. So I went there for that and then got sidetracked. I was already into magic when I was going there. And one of the reasons that I was excited to go there is because I found out there was a really great magic shop in that town. So I got a job quickly at that magic shop, and that just kind of took over because I just started to really soak up so much at that shop because they had a great library that I could read while I was working there. Because a lot of times I was there and nobody would come in the whole time. It was just dead. So I would just sit there and read the entire time. And that's what I did, man. I just soaked up as much as I could. And when I finished school, I just, my grandmother sent me a news clipping. She said, hey, they have a thing in the newspaper saying they're looking for performers for this summer to perform on the street. And they're going to give people like permits, basically. They're going to only have so many performance permits. And that was the first I'd ever heard of like a performance permit. I was like, wow, that's cool. And I'm like, wow, my grandma wants me to try out for this thing. And she was like the one that kind of nudged me to do it. So I did it, and they didn't have, you know, many people show up. It was like a guy that juggled me, a guy that played guitar, another guy that did saxophone, another guy called Crazy Richard that did like, you know, just basically juggling, but he was a little bit more crazy. He did like fire devil sticks and stuff. And so they were like, oh yeah, you guys are all hired. You're all great. And you all get passes. And that was kind of like my first full-time magic gig, was doing street stuff, which was like, I had no clue what I was doing. Really like baptism by fire type of situation, but the other guys were performers who had done the street. So they basically showed me how to create the pitch and do everything. So that was really nice of them to be able to do that. They would basically give me their crowds at first. They would just hand them over to me, which was like, you know, something that people don't usually do, which is really nice. And then eventually I learned how to make my own, which was awesome. And then I don't really do the streets anymore. I haven't in years, but that was basically how I started out. And then immediately started to do restaurants and got really lucky and landed like a big deal with a company where I was just doing like 5 to 6 restaurants a week, just one, a different one every night. And I did that for like over 10 years and eventually just stopped and started to just do private events and corporate events and stand-up stuff and releasing magic tricks and stuff like that.
Well, you know, the two things that you said you do a lot of there at the beginning, which is street magic the two things he said you did, that's like the thing that deming magic in a magic shop and doing street magic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the demo, yeah.
Is that, how important is it to have something like that if you're going to become a full-time performer, if you want to be a really good performer, a really good magician? Is it important to have something where you're constantly performing non-stop as opposed
to... Sure, yeah, that's like the... Looking back now, it was very... some of it was very painful at the time, but unbeknownst to myself, it was the best thing I could have done. You know, I was, like you said, working in a magic shop, magic stuff's like a special thing because you're in kind of like a special place. You have like a special thing that you can perform behind and you can set up things just the way you want. So that's really cool. And so you can kind of get a little bit of a glimpse of what it might be like to perform behind a bar or someplace that you can actually just control your complete environment, which is really cool. But also you get an idea of what a pitch is like a pitchman or a demo guy is a little bit of a different monster than just a magic performer in itself. And looking back over the years, I'm sure you agree, some of the best magicians have been some of the best demo guys. You know, those are the most fun people to watch sometimes, especially if you're at a convention or something like that in that type of a magic environment. So you get into that, obviously, if you're at a magic shop, you might do nickels to dimes 5,000 times, you know, where else are you going to be able to do that? You know, not a lot of other places other than maybe the streets or restaurants or something like that. But most people have like this set of values about magic, and there's certain tricks that are considered like slum magic or like magic shop magic tricks. And so you might not necessarily perform nickels to dimes at your restaurant because you don't think it's good enough for you. But if you do it 5,000 times at the magic shop, you realize it's a really good trick. You know, so there's this thing that, and it instills a good sense of taste, I think, in people. So usually people that have worked at a magic shop for a while, they just have a usually good sense of what tricks work and what tricks are good. And I think that's an important thing to have, because if you have that, then that's half the battle. You know, the other part's just showing up and not smelling.
Absolutely. You talked about restaurants at that. You said that you did so many restaurants. Now you literally, and I mean literally, written the book on getting restaurant gigs, yeah, and getting gigs in general. You wrote a book called The Gig, which is an amazing book. I've seen it. It's brilliant.
Thanks, man. It's pretty short and to the point. Like, this is what I did. This is what worked for me. I could probably update it with a lot more thoughts nowadays, but that's what worked for me at the time, and I would still stand by it. It's just kind of like the shotgun method, basically. Just ask 1,000 people, and at least 3 are going to say yes. You know, and you just need really one if you just want to get one gig, but. At the time when I started asking, I was like, wow, all these people said yes. I didn't realize that I could get this many yeses. So I just did the best that I could. A couple people couldn't really afford it, which was okay. But the people that could, you know, I just stuck with them. And that was really how I broke into full-time magic, because I was in a situation where I had a pretty decent job, but it wasn't a job that I enjoyed. So I was young at the time. I was like maybe 21, 22. I was like, what do I have to lose? I'm just going to try to do full-time magic. So I just, like I said, I just like called every restaurant, and I would show up at restaurants dressed in a suit, ready to do some magic, you know, looking nice and smelling nice and presentable. And because I think that's really a big part of it, is just letting them know that you're not going to be an offensive, weird dude, you know? So just showing up and being likable is so much of it. And then once they see it happen, let me just go to a couple of tables and I'll show you what this looks like. And they see it and how the people react and how people just love it. They're like, oh, okay, I understand now. Cause so many people just don't understand what you're talking about. You're gonna do a magic show at the restaurant. What do you mean you're gonna pull a rabbit out? That, like, we can't even do that. That's against the law. They just start like freaking out. So people have so many preconceived notions about magicians because they've only seen a couple, usually maybe just one. And it might not have been a good one, unfortunately. So, yeah, we're always working against that.
Yeah, it's so true. And but I think restaurant magic, it's the holy grail for somebody who's newer into magic that wants to start getting regular work to try and work on their act. Having a restaurant residency is just gold dust. You know, it's kind of somewhere where you're constantly having to come up with new material. It helps you find your character. It helps you learn how to perform. It's just a great thing to do.
Yeah, it's like really, you touched on it earlier. It's like one of those things where you're basically put in front of an audience a lot, and you are forced in situations a lot where you get to try new things. That's such an amazing thing to be able to try something every 2 minutes. You can walk up to a new person and try something new every 30 seconds if you wanted to, you know, which is so cool. So in one night of doing 2 hours of magic, you can try 50 new things if you wanted to, and you had the ability to, which I think is so much fun. And I would actually try to do that sometimes. I would just like, you know, go through a list of, I would just like, you know, read five or six close-up books during the week and just make a list of all the different tricks I would do and just burn through all of them. And, you know, and immediately there'd be ones that would stick out to me that I like the plots, or that the plots appeal to the people more. And, or there are ones that I'm like, oh, that was rough. I'm going to have to work on that one for a few months. But those are the most fun things to me. But yeah, just the flight time in front of the audience is nothing compares to that. The best people that I've ever seen usually are the guys that have just spent the most time in front of a live audience, because you just learn how to behave. You learn how to deal with any situation. You can't be shook, really. The best performers that you like, I'm sure we probably like the same guys. They're like infallible. You couldn't mess them up. You couldn't heckle them, just because they've had it happen to them before and they know how to handle it. And that's what separates the pro or the men from the boys, or however you want to say it, the ladies from the girls, is just being able to have the confidence to know that nobody can really mess with you because everybody already has, you know? And I think that if you can just laugh at your failures, then you can never screw up. You know, because you don't really have that much invested in it. You know, it is, you know, I've always thought that that's the best way to react to any type of failure. If you drop something, just kind of laugh it off or make a joke about it. Self-deprecating humor works really well for my performance character. So I can, you know, if I mess up, I can make that five minutes of funny if it's the right situation, you know.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about creativity, because you are known as a creator of magic. You have released a lot of magic throughout the years. Was the first thing, as I said, I can't remember whether the first thing I saw of yours was outside.
Yeah, that was probably because it wasn't a lot before that. I had a few things that were definitely published before that, but not of much importance that would have caught your eye. I was involved with the second deal, which was like one of the first online forums back in the 90s. And I had published some things on there that had came out eventually and been printed in book form. And then I believe my actual first trick that was published was in Magic Magazine. And that was when John Rockerbomber was doing it at the time. I sent him a couple things and he published a trick of mine with a popsicle where it's called spirit eating, where you basically talk about the ability to like eat something while just staring at it. And so I would take like a normal popsicle and take it out of the paper sleeve and just do a paddle move with it and show that it's normal, and then put it back in the sleeve and stare at it. And then my teeth would be purple or whatever, you know, I'd smile. And then I would take it back off and show that there's bites taken out of it. So that's all it was just a paddle move and a little bit of stuff in your mouth. But I love the idea of just staring at something and eating it. I've played around with that plot a lot since then, and I've got a couple of different versions of it. And then the tan line was, I also actually, it's funny because I sent John the tan line as well. And I don't know if he just didn't like it or didn't want to use it, but he just didn't say anything about it and it never came out. So then I sent it to Channel One magazine, and then they put it out as like a little pamphlet. It was an insert, and that was a big deal, and everybody wanted to do it. Like Copperfield contacted me about doing it. Penn and Teller did it on TV, and a bunch of other people that have done it too. Marco Tempest, the Carbonaro Effect, did it on one of their episodes, which was really funny because he had an episode where he was like a guy that worked at a tanning salon. So he did this whole thing. It was really funny. So yeah, it's like one of those tricks that I drew a picture in a notebook one day of it, and it was in the notebook for years, and I thought it was just kind of stupid. And then it kept popping up in my brain, and I'm like, I should just do it. I should just go to the salon. And because I was, at the time, I was like the type of person that would never go into a tanning salon. That was not something I would ever think of doing, you know? And so I finally did it and just went and set it up. And the reaction that I got was amazing. So then I was just like, okay, I guess I got something here. So yeah, it's a unique plot. It's not really something that has been done before, like the idea of moving something on your person, I guess. I think there has been since then, but now that people are moving nipples and stuff.
You were definitely the first guy to set that trend. You absolutely were.
If there is one before me, I will definitely bow to that person. Maybe there's a moving freckle or something like that.
And you know, you've created so much stuff. I think from outside the box, you then went on to Visual Voodoo, I think, and a lot of individual products. And the thing that I always, I mean, I'm a massive fan of yours, as you know, but I think my favorite product that you've ever created, just because
Stone Purse.
Yeah. You know, I'm calling you.
Well, I guess that. 100%. Thanks, man. That was another trick where, I was just at a friend's house, and he had what I thought was a purse, but it was a rock. And so I just went to pick it up, and I was like, oh, and in that instant, I was like, oh, I just fooled myself. There's a trick right there. So I instantly just came up with it in that moment. So I love stuff like that, where it's just like, whoa, I just fooled myself. There's an idea. And it was really interesting because he's like a hardcore coin guy. So it totally made sense for him to have one of those little black Goshman style purses sitting there. But he's also like this archaeologist type guy. So he collects rocks and things. So it completely got me. And I immediately said to him, I was like, this looks like a purse. And he's like, oh, that's a great idea. And so that was it. And it didn't take much of, you know, playing around with it. It's really one of those things where once you have the idea, it's like, do whatever you want with it. You can use it however you'd like, because you're just gonna pull out your coins, and no one's gonna pay attention to the switch. Do whatever you want. And by the time you direct your attention back, it's too late. So I like the idea of kind of delaying it and pretending to open it and all those things. So then it's just like smack, it's way too late. And I've played around with having it actually like break in half and different things like that. And you can really get kind of creative with it. I've made ones for guys where the coin's stuck in it, so it breaks, and there's actually like a coin stuck in the solid thing at the end, which is kind of cool if you're doing a, you know, one-time thing. But yeah, it's just David Harkey has something kind of similar where he makes the deck turn old, and then he blows on the deck and all of a sudden it's dusty, and then he drops it and it cracks in half. So that was kind of like something that was inspiration for that too. Even though, like I said, the main thing was just seeing my friend's coin purse. But yeah, that's I'm glad you enjoy that, because that's been a lot of fun for different magicians, I know.
I haven't gone to a gig in about 10 years without taking that. For me, it's as strong as a jumbo coin finale for me. When you do the end of the coin routine, it's amazing.
It
really is.
Well, it's also like, it reminds me of doing like solid deception too. It has that kind of feeling of, you know, this object where it's now different, and you're like, but wait, didn't I touch that, or didn't we shuffle, you know, I thought we opened that. I thought you, you know, there's this kind of this, wait, what happened? Where was I when this?
Well, here's the question for you. You've released so much material, and I want to talk to you about some of that stuff, but what advice would you give somebody who wants to create their own magic to release? Because it's the ultimate thing, isn't it, for somebody getting into magic. We see it a lot on this channel. Oh, how do I become famous releasing magic? How do I create magic that I can sell to magicians? And how do, you know, my question is, do you have any advice when it comes to creating a magic trick?
Yeah, my creativity has always just been because I like to play with things, and I always just go, oh, what if I just did this? And that's really cool, but I don't like the way he did that last part. It looked kind of weird, so maybe I could change that. So I've just always been a tinkerer. I just always want to fix things, even if they don't need fixing. And if I showed you my library, you also see that I love to read everything. There's you know, very little of the English literature of magic that I haven't read. And if I haven't read it, I'm probably about to read it on my stack, or I have it accessed to Ask Alexander, and I'm just always researching stuff on there. So a lot of it is, it kind of reminds me of the old Einstein thing where creativity is being able to hide your sources well, which I think is a great quote from him, because he's like one of the most creative geniuses of all time. But he obviously just consumed everything he could, probably, you know, and that helped feed his output. So I just want to know everything about everything, so that way if I want to come up with a trick with a shoe, that I just research every trick that's ever been done with a shoe, you know. And along the way you'll find some really fun stuff, and you'll go off from these wormholes, and you'll discover old routines and old presentations that are really fun. But I also like to just go, what if, you know, that's the easiest way to create, I think, is just go, what if, dot, 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 you know, what if I could make this shoe turn into a frozen block that looks just like a shoe, but it's now frozen solid ice. You know, I don't know why I said that, but that just popped into my head. And then I just try to figure out how. And then sometimes it happens where I, this has probably happened to you, where you see something and you see it wrong, or you read something wrong. Like maybe you see an ad in a magazine and you're like, you're reading it and you read it wrong. And so it kind of, you envision this effect in your head and they're like, oh, that's really cool. And then you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, they're talking about something completely different. But what you just thought of in your head is now this creative thought, but you wouldn't have had that thought unless you were kind of reading something and looking at something. So I'm always being inspired by other magicians and other things. I'm constantly trying to read any book that I can about any subject, not just magic, because that obviously crosses over and helps you be inspired to think of other things. So I also was never really inspired to be famous. Like the first time I ever published something was just because I thought it was cool. Like I said, the second deal was that online forum. They would have this thing every couple of weeks called a problem posed, where they would pose a new like a new plot in card magic, which is really fun to me because I was just kind of trying to soak up as much card magic as I could at the time in the 90s. And I loved this idea of trying to come up with a solution to a plot. And so I would always submit my solutions. And one time I got second place, which I thought was really cool. And so that motivated me to come up with more stuff. And even from the beginning, the first time I went to an IBM club meeting, they showed me a couple of things. They told me to get Bobo's coin magic, go buy a thumb tip. They gave me a couple pointers. And then I came back and I immediately had shown them like this bottle cap trick that I came up with. And they were like, where did you learn that? And I was like, oh, I just thought of it. And they're like, what do you mean you just thought of it? You've been doing magic for like a week. And so like to them, it was like crazy that I would come up with something. But to me, it was just natural. I was like, oh, I thought that's what you're supposed to do, is just like, once you know how to do a sleight, then just apply that to other stuff. And so I've always just been from the beginning wanting to tinker with things and change the objects and move things around. So I think the most of my creativity just comes from being playful and just playing around with things and wanting to, like the tan line thing was, I was playing around with the old gold finger thing where you move the finger ring from finger to finger. And I would have a tan line from the ring, you know. And I thought, oh, it'd be cool if you could move the tan line, because then you could be like, you know, married, divorced, you know, and that's a really funny gag to just pop the. And then I thought, oh, it'd be cool if you could do it bigger. And then I thought, you know, the watch is bigger and you can kind of move it up your arm, which is really fun. And since then, you know, magicians have done it on different spots. And Dynamo actually did it on somebody else, moved their tan line, which I thought was pretty cool. It's like, I was like, hey, man, if you can do it, do it. That's cool.
That's awesome. Now, you touched on something there to do with creativity, which is people have a desire to be famous, and they do. You see it over and over again, and I think we're seeing it a lot with people releasing downloads before they're ready, maybe, and I've talked about this on the channel. You are famous in Magic, you know, as a creator and as a performer, you've lectured literally all over the world. You've sold and created dozens and dozens and dozens of really well-respected, well-known magic tricks. Was it a conscious effort to have your profile so high? Was it something, was it like, I have a burning desire to be
right
this guy, or was it, did it just happen?
No, yeah, I kind of started to mention that earlier. Like, from the beginning, I always just kind of naturally wanted to create stuff. And then I also saw quickly that I'm going to reinvent the wheel every time if I don't know a lot. You know what I mean? Because that happens all the time. People release stuff every day and they don't know that it's an old thing. So I also, like, I saw the best guy at the time that I saw was this guy named Jim Pavlika, who was just a monster close-up guy. Like, his chops were just the best I had ever seen. And when I went to his house, I saw that he had this amazing library. So I saw that there was a connection here, that not only was he an amazing magician, but he also had the best library that I'd seen of all the other magicians. So I'm like, well, there's a connection here. So I just started soaking up all the magic I could. And I lost my train of thought here. What was the question?
Was it a conscious effort to become famous?
Oh yes, the conscious effort. So yeah, the original first time I started submitting stuff was just because I was excited to be in this like problem posed situation. And then when I started sending stuff to John Rockerbomber for magic, it was more of, I think that somebody else could use this more than me, almost. You know, I think this is a cool idea that I want to share. I don't know if I live in Michigan, so I don't necessarily get to do a lot of popsicle magic because I have like a month and a half out of the year that it's warm, you know? So it was like, hey, maybe I could send this to the guys in the warm areas. So it's always been a want to kind of like get it out. And nowadays, and not even nowadays, just like almost my whole career, the reason why I've always put so much stuff out is because I want to get it out of my head more than anything. It's just my way of being done with it. You know, sometimes me being done with it is being done with it after a year. Sometimes it's me being done with it after doing it for 15 years, you know? And oftentimes I just want to set it free. And I really, and I mean that when I say this, I want someone to make it better, because a lot of times I'm not spending 5 years with the trick. I'm just spending a year with it and then, you know, releasing it, or maybe 2 years and then releasing it. And so someone that does it for 5 years is going to come up with better things with it, you know, or maybe even someone that does it for 5 months, if they just stumble upon something, you know, there's no wrong or right answers. Cause I've definitely had some young kids come up to me and show me better versions of my stuff. And I'm like, that's awesome, dude. That makes me so happy that you took something of mine, you made it even better. That's cool. That's awesome. That's what it's all about, you know?
But I mean, the stuff that you've released, I can't think of a bad Nate Kranzo trick.
Thank you.
I'll send you
a list.
Well, you know what? I mean, I don't mean this as a diss, so I really don't. But if you look at the two most famous Canadian magicians, Sankey and Sanders, they are so polar opposites, because Sankey releases a lot of stuff, and some of it is amazing, and then some of it, because the level of the stuff he releases, some of it isn't as great. While Sanders, he probably only releases, what, two things a year? But right. Everything is amazing. And sure, I'd say on a Sankey Sanders scale, good point, which I think is a new scale in magic. There you go.
That's hilarious. That's good. No, that's good. That's a great analogy.
In a Sankey Sanders Canadian scale, you're definitely pointing right there at the Sanders level.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. But yeah, I can honestly say I've never released anything that I haven't tried. You know, having said that, I will say that I think you can get to a certain level of performance and creativity where you can come up with something and just know that it's good. You know what I mean? I'm sure you can understand that. But I think it takes a lot of hard work to get to that point. And I really think, you know, a lot of the stuff for me is just, I'm always going through phases. So like if I'm going through a mentalism phase, I'll create a lot of mentalism stuff, and then I'll put out like a mentalism booklet. And then I'll get into like short cards, you know, and I just hop around, you know, because one thing will like really interest me, and then I'll do a deep dive on that thing. And then I'll just have so much information that it causes me to create. And then I'll start cross-referencing different old things, and you can have a lot of fun that way, you know?
Well, here's a question for you. You brought up mentalism. So let me ask you a question. We have a lot of people asking us questions on this channel. And recently, one question that's come up an awful lot is how to perform mentalism. And as a magician, do you find that performing mentalism takes away something from the mentalism? And what's the difference between mentalism and mental magic? Now, you are a magician. You know, you've released so much amazing magic tricks, cards, coins, all this stuff. But you've also brought out some great mentalism routines. Like your magazine test is, for me, probably the best test that there is out there, bar none. How do you perform, if you're doing a set and there's magic and mentalism in there, how do you approach that?
Sure. Well, I think there is definitely a slippery slope if you're doing more of like a psychic type show as opposed to a mentalism show. So that's like a kind of its whole different animal. I've never really felt comfortable with having anybody believe what I'm doing is real. So I say that because I've had happen where people would come up to me and say, hey, how long have you had this, this ability? Cause I feel like they wanted to talk to like a dead relative or something, you know? And I was like, oh man, I started to feel bad. I'm like, yeah, it's just stuff that I've learned. It's something that you can do. I just have practiced these techniques, you know, and so you have whatever type of spiel you want to give them about how you can do what you do. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I've been able to combine magic and mentalism pretty easily, but I'm not presenting it in a psychic type way. It's more of a, these are just really amazing things I can do. And I think that blends together for an audience. They don't have as much of a distinction as mentalism and magic. They just go, wow, that's impossible. And that other thing was impossible. Those are just two impossible things, you know? It can be really weird if you do like, I don't know what the best analogy is. If you go from like some really interesting like card manipulation act to some like a Q&A type thing, you know, there's just certain things that don't fit together. But having said that, I'm sure there's somebody who's awesome who could pull it off, you know, who just has like that likable personality and could just switch from character to character or just figure out a way to make it work. There's no wrong answers. There really isn't. But there's just certain things that work better together. So like I have my, like you mentioned, the magazine test, which I usually always do. I usually do that second to last. I oftentimes will close with it because it's a really strong trick. I act like that's my closer. And then I just do one more thing, you know, as a afterthought. But I present that as my closer and it's that strong. And then I usually do maybe two other things. I'll do either a psychometry test, which is fun for me just because I get five people up on stage and it's just all about having fun with moving this people around and the interaction with them. It's just really about playing with five people. It doesn't even matter what the trick is. It just happens to be a mentalism presented piece. And then usually towards the beginning of my show, I do some type of prediction of a card, and I'll often do card to fly where I just have them think of a card and I pull it out of my fly. It's just a silly thing with the many tekel deck, which I like to do because I love the method, but it also just gets a funny reaction. And then it lets the audience know that I'm silly, you know? And I think that's really important because if they know that I'm silly, then they're going to relax a little bit, you know, as opposed to someone who's, you know, going to present some really serious magic or, you know, going to present some serious mentalism where they're going to try to pull something out of your head that you might not want anybody to know, you know? So cause that could be really like off-putting. If they think you're really reading people's minds, then they're going to go, oh man, I don't want them to know that I'm cheating on my husband. So there's weird things that can pop up. So yeah, I let them know right at the beginning of my show that I'm very silly and this is just going to be silly. So, and that's not maybe the right answer for some people. They don't want to be silly. You know, they want to be taken really serious, but I think that you can be taken very seriously while still being silly if you do it the right way, you know?
Absolutely. Now, you have created so much magic. I reckon you've probably forgotten some of the tricks you've performed, that you've created over the years.
Well, I always tell people at lectures that if you want to see something that I've put out, I would love to do it. As long as I can remember to do it, I will try to do it for you, you know? And more often than not, I can remember it and I can do it. It's just whether or not I have the prop or the gaff with me. But yeah, most of the stuff that I put out, I can still do and remember. There's definitely things that I put out when I was young that have evolved that are different now, that if you were to see them now, they'd be different and maybe a little bit more refined. But yeah, there's definitely stuff that I've forgotten just because I've put out a lot of stuff. And I did a monthly column in MUM for a while too. So I was putting out a lot of stuff in that as well.
What's your favorite creation? your favorite thing that you've created?
You know,
I'd love to know.
I usually think it's whatever I've just created, because it's like the one I've spent the most time with recently. It's like my newest child, you know. And for a long time, I probably would have said the tan line, just because it got probably the most attention of any trick that I've created. But I don't know. I really love Super Ball, one of the most recent ones I've come out with. Yeah, just because it's so simple, anybody can do it, and I love being able to create, or not necessarily create, but I love being able to do a trick that looks like real magic that I can show to someone who wants to be able to do some magic that isn't a knuckle busting sleight of hand person, that maybe wants to do a trick for their like grandchildren or something, you know, that can do that trick, you know. And I think that's really cool. And it also is a trick that appeals to, if you're 2 or 92, you understand what a bouncy ball is in a quarter.
Well, that's Brian's favorite Nate Kranzo trick right there.
That's awesome. I absolutely love the wild coin idea. I think that's really a great idea. So especially at the end, you can have 3 balls ready to be switched out and you can dump them out. That's great. I love it. Yeah. So once again, I high five him.
I tell you what, I've made a reputation for myself when I'm going around magic clubs and conventions doing a trick that no magician has ever seen. And I always do it as an opener to my lecture, but I don't teach it. I'm like, if you want to see it, it's Nate Kranzo. You got to check it out. Nobody's ever seen it. Hot sauce. That was my go-to restaurant trick.
That's actually a really great trick, because most people don't realize how cool of a little effect you can get with the tip and the paper. You know, it creates almost like a little volcano kind of, you know. It's kind of cool.
It really is.
The bonus of the smoke is just like the icing on the cake. I think it's great, because you can kind of, you can really talk for a couple minutes if you want, and then produce the smoke just later. And they're like, well, there's the disconnect from the time, you know. It's great.
Absolutely.
That's now, awesome, man. That makes me happy that you mentioned that, because that's one that I kind of forgot about, but I used to do all the time, because it was a great gag.
You used the same method to do the coin bend, which was just
exactly. Yep.
Encyclopedic knowledge of your career. I think I'm coming across with that here.
That's impressive. If we were at a convention, I would give you a free set of notes.
I've probably already got them.
That's true.
Here's another question for you. I want to talk about.
By the way, I love your stuff too, man. For a minute there, you were putting out a lot of coin stuff, and that was really catching my attention. You were putting out like coin routines, and you're posting videos of those. And I think in that run, you had mentioned the stone purse amongst that.
Filmed the stone purse to come out on a Magic Live in 2 weeks' time. So I'll tag you in it when I put it out. I've filmed 3 different routines with it. So I'll
eventually I want to put out a book, because I've had a lot of magicians send me ideas and routines, and they've had me, ask me if I can make, you know, them a certain way. Like I mentioned the one with the rock stuck or the coin inside. One time I had a Joel Given asked me if I could make one where it looked like there was an impression of a Chinese coin on the purse for whatever reason for his routine. And so there's all these different things that I've gotten from people. Well, and then there's another one.
I'll happily send you my stuff if you want it to put in the
book. Oh yeah, I would love it. And the other thing that I think you would think is cool is if you just take a normal standard size black balloon and just fold it in half, it almost looks as exactly like a purse. So you can kind of do the same switch, set it down. At the end, you shake it out and it's a balloon. You blow it up, the coin's inside, or you can pull it out. You know, it's a nice little thing, because the visual is just so weird when you shake it out, you know.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
And after playing around with that, I was doing a different version where I had a pair of black panties that were folded up, so I could just shake out the panties and this.
Well, you know what? I want to talk to you about the stuff that you've got on your site, because a lot of the stuff that you create these days is just specifically on your site. Before I ask you that question, one other question about creativity and specifically about releasing products. You have released through so many different dealers. Like, obviously, you spent a lot of the time releasing stuff through E. You did the Box Monster. I think your first DVDs were through maybe Magic Smith from memory, maybe.
Yep, that's it. Yep.
You've put stuff out directly through Murphy's. I know the Stone Purse at the moment is a Penguin thing. You've got so many companies that you've actually gone back and forth with. Going back to the question about a magician, have you got any advice for people that have spent years creating and they want to release this stuff? I don't want to put you on the spot as in which dealer is best to go through.
Oh, no, it's fine. Because I think the answer, I've hopped around mainly just because I don't have any bad vibes with anybody. I have good relationships with all of them. And I guess I just felt like, hey, let's try this guy. Hey, let's try this guy. Let's see what happens here. And they've all been different experiences, and some of them have been better than others.
I was speaking to Sean Dunn the other day, and he had so many nice things to say about you.
Oh, I appreciate that. I love Sean. I've done a lot of projects with Sean. He's been with Penguin for years. He's kind of like their guy behind the scenes. So if you ever do anything with Penguin, you probably know Sean, and you've worked with Sean. But and he, even before that, he had kind of like his own separate thing, and I had done some stuff with him. But yeah, so that's the other thing, is once you work with somebody like Sean's a great example, someone you get along with, and I feel like I can just show up and we can knock something out really fast because we understand each other. He knows what he wants and I know how to work with him, and we can get it done fast. And I also know I just know that if it's going to be a good audience within a few seconds, you know, I can just be like, I can like, oh, I'll do my warm up trick. And within the few seconds of the warm up trick, I know if this is going to be the good group. So I'll just do like the first phase of my ambitious card and then be like, hey, you guys have a great night, you know, and just walk on. So we don't waste any time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I've always just thought, hey, I don't think there's any reason to not just work with anybody. Initially, I worked with Magic Smith just because he was the first person to say, hey, you want to do a DVD? And I was like, yes, I would love to. I would love to get these ideas out of my head so I can move on to something else. That was kind of what I thought at the time. And then eventually I'm not sure initially how E came about. They just kind of popped out, bam, this company. They were really huge. They spawned from David Blaine. And I think I met Dave Mitchell, who was working with them at Sorcerer Safari's Magic Camp. And he was like, yeah, you should do something with us. And that was it. I ended up doing Box Monster. And then I did like a whole DVD, Boondock, Mental, 52 Gone, a couple of other downloads I've done with them. And then, of course, tons of stuff with Penguin. I helped do their monthly magazine, Penguin Magic Monthly. I do that every month. I still, you know, have stuff through Murphy's. I guess I'm kind of a slut. If you think. But yeah, I just feel like the more the better. Yeah, there it is. Yep.
There you go.
So that's a really fun one. And we put a special gimmick in every month. So that's really fun to do as well. Josh Birch does a really good job usually of every month putting something really neat in there. For the first few years, I was putting the gimmicks in there, and then I just ran out of gimmicks. So Josh has taken over the gimmicks. I put, usually there's at least one or two articles from myself in there, but I mainly curate the stuff that's in there and hit up people for submissions. So if you ever want to submit anything, I would love to have some.
Anytime. That's good. Do you ever find that you create something and you kind of think, well, that works better as an illusionist trick, or that would work better with Penguin, or, you know, or is it just a case of, I'm going to keep that for myself and just put it out on my own list?
Honestly, no. I mean, I don't think that's a bad idea. I just never have. I usually, in the past, like with Illusionist, I did a few projects with them a long time ago. I think Box Monster was almost 15 years ago. And then just didn't for a while. Not for any reason at all. Just didn't put anything out. And then Adam Wilbur started working with them, and I got to be really good friends with Adam. And so he just kind of brought me back in. He's like, hey man, I would love to do anything you want to do. So we started to do stuff again. And that's when I put out 52 Gone and then a couple of other things and kind of got back with E. So honestly, a lot of it's just been through relationships, because I just got to be really, I did Wizard Wars and met Adam through Wizard Wars, and we just kind of hit it off and became good friends. And then And then it was just like, how can we figure out how to hang out and do a project together? So we were always trying to do that. And this is kind of the same thing with Penguin. The last few things, like the Super Ball and the Stone Purse, have been with them, mainly just because I love doing projects with them. I have fun with Sean, and they're the closest one to me. I can drive to Penguin. So it's just kind of like by default, and they're just, you know, they've always treated me so well. And I don't know if you've, I know you have actually, you've worked with them. So they just always do a great job. They always treat you well. So.
They're hitting it out the park, I think, just at the moment. They're just amazing. They're doing.
Yeah. And as an artist, if you work with them, you really feel like you're being taken care of, where sometimes you don't feel like you're being treated as an artist some places, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk to you about your own list, though, because you
have. Oh, thank you.
Because you have your, forget about all the other data, screw Sean, right? You have your own site, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on there that you don't put anywhere else. And the only way you can see
it. I've been doing cool stuff because of COVID. I have been doing a lot more magic collecting, and I've been doing like magic auctions, buying magic, complete magic collections. Like I mentioned, that magic shop, I bought most of their stock. And so what I've been having a lot of fun doing is finding these things like the coin box that was like not available for like 30 years. All of a sudden I have like 50 of them, you know, which is just really cool. And then I also like, here's a great example. This is, do you know this? You know this book?
No, I don't. Never heard of it.
Great book. This is the first one, actually, because you can probably relate. There's not a lot of great stand-up magic card books. Giobbe kind of had a great thing recently, you know, with his, but other than that, there's not a lot. But this is the first one. It's not as glamorous looking, but it's just stand-up card magic of Colin Lynn, and this is further stand-up, and you can probably recognize the Martin Breeze style cover there. And so I picked these up, and I'm reading these, and I'm like, wow, these are really good. And if you look at them, like even looking at like some of the, see if I can find a good example here, like some of the illustrations and stuff, it's just really good. Like Kaufman line drawings, they're really nice. And there's like flourishy type stuff in here. Like there's this swivel force, like this multiple packet cut. And this is from the early 80s. So this is kind of like almost like he's doing like flourishy type stuff, which is really interesting. But he has this amazing routine, which I just love. It's called Invisible Fred. And it's this wind up pair of shoes, which he calls Invisible Fred, his friend Invisible Fred. And he uses that as a cards across, where he makes the card travel across. And I'm like, that is awesome. I'm immediately doing that. It's going in my act. So I found these shoes. So what I've done is I've got stuff like this, where I found like the remaining 20 copies of this, those were at that magic shop. And then I went online, because he actually mentions the shoes that you're supposed to get. They're these special wind-up shoes from Japan. And they're actually still available from the 80s, still in their original packaging. I found a bunch of them on eBay. So I've teamed them up with the books, and I can like curate these things for my list, which I think is really cool. I mean, I've only got so many, so it's obviously not available to everybody, but that's been a lot of fun for me lately to do stuff like that. And this is another one. I'll grab this. And you can probably remember this. This is another Martin Breeze.
Yes.
I love it. It's just, you just carry this one card, you know, you can pretend like you're making them walk through the hole and stuff. So I got a bunch of these with the original card and the gaff and everything. And then at the same time, this is the cool part, in the Talon, at that same time, they had an issue with all these different, like Gordon Bruce, Eric Mason, all these different persons with their versions of Parallax. So I was able to hunt down the remaining 20 copies of these, and I can pair this up with that. And that's kind of a cool thing to offer people, because I think that's a great trick that you can just carry in your wallet and do for any time, you know. You can also teach that to people and give it away, you know.
That's amazing. And you do put so much stuff out. Before we even talk about any further, give me your web address so that people can get on your mailing list. I'm going to put it at the bottom of the screen. I'm going to put a description in the video as well. I'm going to put a link down there. Cool. Where do people go?
It's just cranzomagic.com.
Nice and easy to remember.
That's it, cranzomagic.com. And right now I've got a really cool special. It's like, you know, the holiday.
This is, I posted this on Facebook, man. This is the most insane deal in magic. Like, really, I can't see how you would be making money on this.
I have them all packaged up and ready to go. Yours already went out, actually.
Well, it's without being funny, whenever your list hits my email, I just hit buy because I just know it's going to be amazing. You don't offer anything out unless you believe in it, which is
this is that coin box. So you put the coins in there, and then it's actually got that last coin is gaffed, so you just seal it on there, and then it's completely sealed. It doesn't rattle. It's silent, and you can end with that slug without having to do a switch, which is really cool. And then it comes with the extra Boston box, and you have a bang ring too. So I have the special, basically it's called the mystery box, and I have two versions. I have the coin box and the card box, and that's one of the things that will come in the coin box. And then the card box, I have these different wallets. I've got a bombshell wallet and the hip pocket triple threat wallets, and these are both really cool 20 Miller wallets that are no palm card to wallets. He's got all these really cool ways where you don't have to palm the cards, but you can still sneak them in there and then produce them from. And then the Bindex, I just have had so much fun with it. I didn't realize how cool a Bindex wallet was until I had one, and I hadn't gotten one until recently. And I just love the idea of doing a double lift and saying, this is my prediction, putting it in the wallet and then flipping it around and saying, oh, my prediction's still in there. It was wrong, but let's look in the other compartment here. And it's just like, you just put it in there. It's just so, so cool. You know,
it's so clever, isn't it? It really is.
And I didn't realize how cool it was. I just always saw Bindex bombshell. I'm like, oh, that must be a cool, another version of Caps or something. You know, I never knew what it was until, it's funny, cause I got those wallets and then I stumbled upon at an auction, there was a book of all the Bindex routines by David Bindex and other people. So I kind of hit the gold with that. That was good. So I had all these different routines to play around with, and now I'm coming up with my own Bindex routines and stuff. It's really fun. The boxes are basically over $200 worth of stuff for only $75. And if you want to email me, it's just my name, NathanCranzo@gmail.com. You can kind of say, hey, can you put this in this? I can't obviously make any promises, but I will let that guide me. And for the most part, I can usually put in whatever you ask as long as I have it. So, yeah.
And the thing is, like, you do these quite often, or maybe a couple of times a year, you do these mystery boxes.
And this one's really cool because I've got recently all that stuff that's like no longer made anymore. So I'm throwing in these little things like John Cornelius's Fates date book, you know, which came out in the 80s. It hasn't been around for, and I'm just throwing them in. So I have like, it's like my stuff that's new and these old stuff. So it's kind of like this cool combination.
It's great. And it is literally limited availability because.
Right. Because I only have so many. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got about 20 of the coin boxes left, and then maybe about 30 each of the wallets. So I've got about a limited of that, but, I think over the next 2 weeks, they'll probably sell out for sure.
I'll put a link down in the description to the actual sales page for the mystery boxes so people can. Could you put a video on there as well, kind of showing some?
Yeah. I have one video that just kind of shows all the stuff in the box. And then there's another video going into a little bit more detail about the coin box and the wallets and what they do and stuff.
Awesome. I recommend people get it. I get all your mystery boxes. Everything is really good in there.
Thanks, man. I always try to throw a lot of stuff in there. You know, I've luckily, because I've put out a lot of stuff, I have a lot of stuff I can throw in the box.
Well, you know what? I want to ask you another question before we wrap all this up, which is, and this is a question I ask everyone I interview, and it's especially applicable to you, which is, what's next? And you've had, and by what I mean by what's next is, you're a young guy, you've still got a lot of time to go, but you've accomplished so much. You know, you touched on Wizard Wars, you've been on TV, you've lectured and performed all over the world. You've had the career that people would want to have. You know, you work with Penguin, you work with all these different dealers, you've created so much magic. What's next? Let's, you know, when all of this is over and we've gone from being kind of locked down to all opened up again, what's the plan? What's next? What do you want to achieve? What's on the bucket list?
I think bowling.
No, right. I don't.
You know what I've honestly figured out over the pandemic is how much I love magic history. And just, it's weird because I feel like I know a lot about a certain style of magic. I know a lot about close-up magic. If you ask me anything about anything close-up, I can probably almost tell you the page number. You know, I'm pretty well-read with most close-up stuff. But there's just so much of magic history and like apparatus and illusion stuff. I just don't know any of it. So it's like a I'm starting to go to school again and I'm learning about magic history. I've been learning about, you know, 200 and 300 and 400 and 500 year old books and manuscripts. And I've also been doing a little bit more of the actual like collecting of the older props. So what I think I'm going to be starting to do more is basically just open up more of a magic shop type situation where I just have lots of stuff, not just my tricks, but you can buy, for example, you might be able to buy a 300 year old German card press, which isn't really a magic trick, but it's a beautiful magic antique-y type thing. Or maybe an original copy of Houdin's book for $1,000, or you can get my DVD for 20, you know? So it's, I think it's cool to be able to have all this stuff. I don't know if I'll actually have a physical shop. It doesn't really make sense to do that now anyway, because I can't. But I've started to do, because of the pandemic, I've just been having so much fun with collecting magic. I think for me, it allows me to just play with everything. So I can get a new apparatus and play with it. And go, oh, that's all I wanted to do is just move the little lever. I've always wanted to move that lever on that one thing. You know what I mean? There's like the Steinmeier's knife thing. I always just wanted to play with his knife. I bought his rope routine and I always hid the gimmick knife. I just wanted to always play with it. And now I got that satisfaction, but I don't need to perform it or do it. So now I can throw it on the store, you know? So it's a way for me to get the knowledge about everything and see how everything works. So that way I can talk about it and be like, oh yeah, I know how that works. Or, oh yeah, that's a Connie Hayden gimmick. I know because I've seen them and I know that it's not a press the guitar gimmick. And that type of stuff is really interesting to me. And there's a lot of that stuff. I just didn't know any of it. So I'm going to school every day and learning that stuff. So I really am getting a kick out of kind of becoming slowly that old magic shop guy. I think I'm going to have like anything you're looking for, you can probably call Cranzo and I'll either know where to get it or I'll have it.
There needs to be a place like that on the net, though, because there isn't really anywhere like that.
I agree. There's the magic shops have kind of gone away, and that's, I mean, you can't fight it. It is what it is. It's just easier to have one online, and it is what it is. I will always love to go to a magic shop, and I wish that there was tons of them, but you can't fight the machine that is the online world. So if it's going to be there, you might as well join them and have that online presence. There are a few guys that curate stuff like that, but not enough, and then maybe not as well known. Recently, I went to the history conference, the NEMCA. I don't know if you're familiar. It's the North, yeah, it's New England Magicians Collectors Association, and they have a yearly, basically a history conference. And this year, obviously, it couldn't be held, so it was all done virtual, and it was just amazing. There was talks from different people. Laura London did a talk on that famous manipulation, Mary Ford, lots of great talks, but I just learned so much. And I was shown a couple of websites that are dangerous for me because now I'm going to spend so much money on them. But there's one called magiccollectibles.com, which is just that. And another one, Bradbury Books, Dan Bradbury sends out a weekly magic list of all of the magic books that he has. And most of them are really good, highly sought after books. So that's another one that's like, you should get on that list because there's some cool magic books on there. So little things like that, I just think are great. And we need to have more of those to kind of keep the history of magic alive and keep these old books in circulation and keep people reading, you know?
That's amazing. That's great.
It's fun.
I'm going to ask you one last question because you are so well-read and you do know so many books and so many things and so much stuff that's going on. Let's finish off. Could you tell me what you would say are the top three books, because we've got a lot of newer magicians on this channel that want to get into close-up magic. What are the top three books that you would advise someone new into magic to read if they want to, you know, really take close-up magic seriously?
I'm looking at the books. You know, what's a really good series of books are the Bill Severn books. I recently made it a point to have every one, and I was blown away by how many there were. There's like at least 40, I think, Bill Severn books. But he has one that's just on general close-up magic, and it was actually written and illustrated by Richard Kaufman. So it just looks like a Kaufman book. It's beautiful, and it kind of went under the radar. If you give me a second, I could probably grab it when we're done, and I can show it to you. I think it's just called Impromptu Magic of Bill Severn. It's just a collection of close-up magic, great stuff. And it's cool because Bill Severn was always known for like throwing in his own little unique tricks that he would create, as well as like classic tricks of the day. And then one that I think is always awesome is the Kaufman, the collected almanac, because that's just like a collection of great tricks of like the 90s. And there's just so much stuff in there. So it's like for $40, you get like so much great magic. There's a couple of things that I like that are like the most bang for your buck. Another one is, oh man, there's so many. It's hard to focus on one. All the Carl Fulve stuff, you know, he's got so many of those great Dover books and the Chronicles and, you know, the Epilogue. I think that can be a little bit, I was going to recommend Al Baker, because they now have that collected Al Baker book that's just everything, mm-hmm. which is just like, that's an example of you could just buy that book and not have to ever read another book, and you could have a lifetime worth of magic. It's just amazing. That could be a little bit daunting to someone who's just starting though, but that is, you know, it's just one of those books that is just amazing. And then I tend to lean towards a lot of the collections, like the Almanac collection, like the Spellbinder. I love that Stephen Tucker's collection. It's kind of the same thing as the Almanac. It was like the 80s version of the Almanac. It's like all the popular magicians of the time were contributing tricks, and he was getting stuff from, you know, Elmsley and Roy Walton and all these, you know, Sadowitz and all these different guys. And because not only do you get a feeling of all these different tricks and different styles, but you get a feeling of the era and what was going on. And there's kind of there's a coolness about that you can't get with a lot of other books, you know.
Well, in with that, you've also got
an Apocalypse too, you know. Ah, you
there you go.
Beat to it. That's great. That was on the tip of my tongue. That's I'm glad you pulled that out, because I was trying to think of another example, and Apocalypse is it, you know, like any type of collection like that. You showed the Abra earlier. That's another, anything like that. That's a collection of stuff.
Magical Arch Journal. They released.
Oh yes, you can get that for like, I think it's like $30 or something. Mm. That's amazing, and those things like that. It's just like your money will go so much further than if you were to buy one trick for $30. I mean, think about that. That's just like you could spend a year with that book at least, just going through it and trying to perfect the thing, and you know, a whole lifetime if you think about it. Really, you know. Absolutely. So yeah, those are the ones that I lean towards. Are like you grab the Apocalypse and the collected almanac, and I'm gonna go grab these real quick just so I can show you.
Yeah.
This is my stack that I keep next to my bed that I'm going through. So this is a really cool one. Have you ever read that? The Impromptu Princess?
No, I haven't, no.
It's a complete history about the princess card trick. It's all the different versions of stuff. It's a great book by Peter Tappan. Steinmeier recommended it to me, and it's absolutely awesome. Anything by Eugene Berger. Mm-hmm. Can't recommend highly enough. All of Eugene's stuff, everything. Especially the close-up magic, or I think it's just called Close-Up Magician. There you go, man. For close-up, if you wanted to break into it, that's like you could make a living out of all those tricks. And same thing with this one, too. This is another one. You could just have this book and make a living from it.
Scotty York, yes.
There's like just so much commercial magic in that book, you know? Anything by Rene Levon is highly recommended if you want to learn about style and mm-hmm. and artistic flair. So I've got the Levon books. I've got the Dave Neighbors project. If you're into coins, it's like the Bible.
I want that. I didn't know.
Craig, you need this book. Craig, of all people, you need this book.
It's available? So I mean, I'm a massive fan.
It's volume one and it's sold out. But guess who has a couple copies?
You?
This guy. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'll hold one for you.
We'll talk afterwards.
I haven't even opened this yet, but this is sitting next to my bed, the Skinner, Michael Skinner book. Right. I actually read it when I was young at the magic shop, but I'm going to revisit now like 20 years later. There's nothing to do with magic, but Gary Shandling, great comedian. This is his kind of like, Judd Apatow wrote this kind of biography about Gary Shandling's great, if you're into comedy. And then I never knew of this book, but it's The Magic of Lewis Carroll. Like the actual guy that wrote Alice in Wonderland, he was into magic.
I didn't even know that.
And it's by John Fisher. I just saw it and bought it, and it's really interesting and really cool. And then last but not least, can't recommend highly enough, mm-hmm. Martin Gardner, Encyclopedia. Oh, and there's one more on the bottom. Actually really cool if you're into history. Wow. Illustrated History of Magic by Milburn Christopher. This is like, it's always on like the top, there's like the top always people throughout the years have put out these, you know, 5 foot shelf of magic lists. That was one that was always on there. So I bought it because I'm like, everybody's recommended it. And it really is. It's like a beautiful visual history of magic. He has like all these pictures of magic throughout time. It's really cool. And that's an interesting thing. I've put together a document, a Google document. It's a collection of all these 5 foot shelf recommendations that have been done throughout the years, because it kind of started with Anneman. He created the 5 foot shelf of magic, and he created this list of books he thought you should have. And then like lots of different magicians over the years have put them out. There's actually one that was in Abra, and then also in the Magic Wand that I found. And I've got this document of all these lists, and it's really cool to look at them, because you see there's obviously certain books that always pop up. And then there's ones that you're like, well, I didn't know about that one. Or there's ones that you go, oh, maybe, yeah, I should probably get that one because that keeps popping up on the list and I just never read that one. So it's kind of a good motivation to make you want to seek out these certain things. And then there's, like I said, there's ones that you just go, wow, that was from, you know, some French book and I've never heard of it. Maybe I can find it. I wonder if it's translated. So then you go on this little wormhole, you know, and there you go.
For somebody who loves books so much, would you ever write a book yourself? You've definitely got enough material, like a magnus opus of Nate Kranzo's career to point.
Well, I actually have one in the works with Graham from Magic Scene.
Good guy.
Yeah, he and Mark contacted me about doing one. He actually said, hey, you know, you've put out so much stuff. What do you think about just putting it all together in like one book, just taking all the old stuff? And I was like, yeah, but I have some new stuff too. So let's do like all the old stuff. And I have some new stuff too. So that's what we've been working on. And yeah, it's in the works and it should be out fairly soon, I think.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
yeah. I have put out a couple of small booklets. The only thing that I would really call a book, because it actually is like paperback book. I have two of them. One that's called the Peak Book, really thin little book of just card peaks that I collected of my friends and myself and different ones that I thought were great. And then just within the last 2 years, I put out a little book called Easy Card Magic. And it's just all self-working card tricks. And there's some actually really good tricks in there. A couple of them ended up being Penguin downloads. There's the my Dark Triumph, where you have the spectators kind of do a triumph. And then there's an Oil and Water. They ended up being downloads as separate items. But those are in that Easy Card Magic book. And it really is a great book, because you could hand that to someone who's never done card magic. And it teaches like the Charlier shuffle and a Kriskop force, but you'll also learn versions of Oil and Water and things like that. I just thought it'd be cool to take some of these classic plots and just figure out the easiest way to make it self-working. Like I always thought it'd be cool to do a triumph, you know, almost like cheek to cheek with the, you know, the double backers, but figure out a way to do that with a normal deck. So that was I was just posing these problems to myself. And then I realized, yeah, I've got some good solutions. So let's just put them in a collection, you know? And I have a really cool trick in there called Netflix and Chili, where you have someone pick a card, and then you ask them questions about if they go to the movies, would you want to go to a theater, drive in, or watch Netflix? And then you spell the answers. And depending on how the answer, it's really interesting because they all spell out the exact same. Their answers, the words kind of all spell the same. So they can say popcorn or soda, or they make all these choices, but it always spells out to the right card. So there's some really interesting self-working things that are actually like entertaining and topical, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what? The one thing that shines through about you whenever I speak to you is passion. You know, you meet some creators of magic and you can tell that they're just going through the motions, but you are somebody who absolutely loves magic and is absolutely passionate about it. Not just magic, but as an art. It's just something that just shines through.
Well, I really think that we are so lucky. There's just, I still believe that we can be the headliner on anything. It doesn't matter how, you know, if you have like the most amazing entertainer, if you've got, you know, Prince or Madonna or like these amazing entertainers, you could still put on the best magician after them or next to them if they're awesome, because you just, it doesn't matter how good someone sings, they can't levitate. You know what I mean? They just, this ability that you have that no one else has. So if you can command that and be likable and funny and just hit them hard, I've just seen magic performed so well and so strongly and been moved so strongly by it that I think that it's such a lucky gift to be able to share, even if it's just turning a quarter into a piece of candy and doing it for a kid, or doing a show for 1,000 people. You know, there's one's not better than the other. You know, they're still, you're still sharing a magic moment. It's awesome, you know.
Well, we're about to wrap the whole interview up and finish off, but let me just ask you one more question on that. One thing that I've always noticed about you, whether it's you performing on video or live or in lecture, you are always an engaging performer. Like, you've, it's obvious that you think about the performance. You think about the scripting of it. You think about what you're going to say. And it comes across, it really does. And I know you've done a lot of comedy in the past. Last question, what advice or what book would you suggest people to read if they want to become a better performer? Not just technical side of things, but if they want to be an engaging performer, like you say, where, what would people do to actually be able to do that?
I think there's, unfortunately, there's not a lot of great books. That's a great question. There's not a lot of great books on that subject. I actually, during the pandemic, have written one on that subject. It's a book, just the title of the book is Thoughts on the Performance of Stand-Up Comedy Magic. So there's no tricks in it. It's just exactly what I just said. And what I've done is I've taken quotes from some of my favorite performers and comedians, and I'll use that as a point of reference. Like, it'll be like, blah, 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 Richard Pryor. And then I'll talk about why that's true or why that's important or why he said that and how that applies to the performance of comedy magic. Because I think we get mixed up in this, because if you're a comedian, you're a comedian. It doesn't matter if you're a comedic magician or a comedy ventriloquist or a comedy dog catcher. You know, you're funny if you're funny. And there's, we've seen great funny people on TV throughout the years. Like, we've seen the Smothers Brothers, who were funny with yo-yos. We've seen different magicians who were funny over the years, like Carl Ballantyne, who was really funny, who just did like a spoof act. And there's lots of different ways to be funny, you know. So I think one of the best books on that subject of just entertaining for an audience is Maximum Entertainment, the Ken Weber book, great book. Unfortunately, that's like one of the only few books like that. There's just, you know, a few books that are like that in our field. There's ones that are written for just general entertainment and for comedy. I tend to lean a lot towards the comedy books because I do comedy. So to me, a comedy book is just as good as a magic book because I'm doing comedy. So, you know, I have to have comedy books. You got a good one?
I've got one for you.
There you go. Great book. Any Jay Sankey book. There's also a great book by Jay that's called Zen and the Art of Stand-Up Comedy, if you can Very find good. That. Yeah, Very it's a great good. Book. He's also got another one called Zen and the Art of the Monologue, which is really good. It's written in the same vein and it will give you a lot. It just, you know, any edge that you can have about, you know, being able to speak in public and talk in front of people, because a lot of people have trouble just getting up in front of people, let alone performing a magic trick. You know, it can be very terrifying for people. So I actually was that way at first. I was not the guy that wanted to be in front of people. That's why I leaned towards close-up, because I didn't have a problem showing three people a card trick, but I didn't want to show 30 because I would get embarrassed and it was just too much attention. And as humans, I don't think we're used to having 40 people look at us at once. Some of us are just born that way. They want it. You know what I mean? They're just, give me your attention. I need all the attention. That's just some people are like that. And I am not that way at all. I'm the opposite. I want to just disappear. That's just my normal self just chilling. It's just, I just want to blend in and I don't want any attention on me at all. I just want to kind of blend into the atmosphere. So it was really hard. And it still is to this day to perform. I kind of have to switch modes and get into, like, you know, performance mode, because by nature I'm kind of reclusive and I just don't want to say anything and be quiet. So but I can definitely turn it on and know how to go into that. So I didn't really know how to be comfortable in that space. And you can't be comfortable in that space unless you just do it a bunch of times. So I just forced myself to do it. I took a class, actually. I took the Dale Carnegie course, which is a very popular course in the States, which is basically just like a Toastmasters or something like that, where they just have you get up. And it's really about nothing. You just say, hey, you have to talk for 2 minutes, talk about something, you know, or they might give you a subject, but there was like no wrong or right answer. It was just getting you up in front of people, and they would give you, tips about remembering people's names and using people's names and just different, very basic things. But what it was doing is it was just making you get up every time. I think it was like, I don't know, 6 weeks or something like that. And you had to usually get up at least twice each class. So there's now 12 gigs basically that you have under your belt. And it really is all about flight time. Each time you spend in front of your audience, you gain a little bit more confidence, a little bit more everything. Just, you just learn so much more. There's not a time I've ever spent on stage where I didn't learn something, you know?
And it is that difficult thing, pushing yourself out your comfort zone and getting you, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that are, that could be amazing, but they just can't take that leap, and you've got to just take that leap.
And there's also no wrong answer. Maybe you realize that you aren't, you just can't get past it. You just aren't like this engaging performer. Maybe you need to do a silent act, or maybe you need to do him, and that's okay. You know, but you aren't going to figure it out unless you just do it a bunch, you know? And I feel like that was the only way that I was able to ever do comedy magic, because I wasn't funny at first. I was just doing magic. And then I just started doing a lot of magic. And when you perform in front of an audience a lot, eventually you come up with little asides and little lines. And I realized that I could be funny. And then I just started to kind of lean into that and go, well, maybe I'll be funny on purpose, you know? And then I just started to think of that as magic. And I just started to read everything about comedy. I started to go to comedy clubs and do open mics and just be basically a comedian. And there's all kinds of funny things I learned quickly that, you know, comedians don't like magicians and all these, there's all these weird things that happen. But I also quickly realized that if I go up there and I'm funny and I can do a card trick, I now have something way better than they, all these comedians in the room have. And yeah. I just got way more interesting because I'm now a variety act, because I can be funny like all of them and I can make your card appear next to my penis. Oh my gosh.
Like, absolutely. Absolutely.
It really is. Like, it's like you can one up anybody. Oh, I can sing and I can play guitar and I can levitate. You know what I mean? It's just like that one thing that most people can't do. It's just a really unique thing to be able to share astonishment, because it's such a unique feeling. It's not like the happiness from a song, you know? It's a different feeling. It's a different emotion.
As Paul Harris would say, that moment of astonishment.
The moment of astonishment. And he used to say, like, let them marinate in the moment. I love that. And that's something that you can really do as a magician. And you can do that as an artist and as a musician, I'm sure, as well, in their own way. But we have that really, really cool advantage of being able to mystify and create wonder and make them feel like a child, you know?
Absolutely. Nate, thank you so much for coming.
Hugs, brother.
You know, I've followed your career and I think you're absolutely amazing. And I wanted to have you on the channel very, very early
on. So much gratitude, man. So much gratitude.
He's amazing. Guys, please do me a favor. Jump on Nate's list. Make sure that you keep an ear out for the stuff.
Even if you don't want to buy anything, that's totally cool. Just sign up for my mailing list, because I do send out cool things periodically. I send out free tricks and just news about things that are going on and whatnot.
But you're not one of these guys that just like spams people every day. You only hear, well, which is why I know when I see an email come through from you, there's going to be something good in there.
Yeah, it's usually something cool. I don't send an email just to say, hey, buy something again this week. I usually have something new to talk about, or a new product, or a new event that I'm doing, or something cool that I want to share with you guys, like this. I'll email all my people and tell them about this.
Thanks, man. And yeah, make sure you check out the Mystery Box. They're going to be going fast. We're filming this on Monday and it's going up the next day. So when you're watching this, there probably still will be some more stuff left, but I don't know how long for. So yeah, make sure you check that out.
It's going to be pre-Black Friday madness.
I love that. And again, thank you so much, Nate. We need to talk.
My pleasure.
We'll stop rolling. I want that Dave Neighbors book.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good.
And guys, don't forget to subscribe to the channel. We're going to be back again tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow? Tomorrow at 5 o'clock, there is going to be the review show with me and Ryland. So if you like the review show, that's at 5 o'clock tomorrow. And yeah, one more time, Nate, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, man. Very, very appreciate it.